I know you're usually a busy guy. You have different ventures that you play with simultaneously. You have different projects that you deal with. What would you say, like, the past months, where has been your focus? What are the projects that you're currently dealing with the most?
Yeah, so last couple of months, last couple of 6 months or so, we are active launching new lending businesses across different countries. So November of last year, we launched Malaysia online consumer lending business there. We launched Peru. We launched actually also end of last year, a point of sale brokerage in Mexico, which is a business model where we are not actually lenders ourselves. We are connecting lending companies with retail chains, let's say where you go buy electronics or furniture. And then we're kind of a layer in between that allows customers to buy these items on credit and pay in installments. So basically like a buy now, pay later, but in physical stores, yes, which in Mexico is a niche that is kind of a good opportunity. And we have experience from back in the Green Finance, now Avafin days, where we launched a lending business in Mexico. So we have an understanding of how that market operates. So those are a few things. There's a bunch of other things going on, running the existing businesses. Jordan, going through a licensing process. Esketit moved from Ireland to Croatia. I'm sure we'll talk about that. So there's been a lot of work there. Span the Capital, also an originator on Esketit, which is a non-performing loans investment company in Spain. So we buy overdue loans from banks, consumer lending businesses, and we give those loans to collection agencies, and we try to make a difference in between what we pay versus what we collect. And a number of experiments that we always do in order to find these new opportunities, new countries, new business models. So we're looking at the Middle East. Maybe not the most popular destination for the last couple of weeks, but in the long kind of term, a great market also for lending and fintech products. So that's in short.
All right. I think that provides a good overview and also had a lot of cues that we can pick up on now. Yeah, let's talk a bit more about Esketit. Maybe before we address, let's say, the elephant in the room, relocation then to Croatia, maybe in general, like, how do you see the development of Esketit, let's say, in the past 12 months? How would you assess the performance of the marketplace overall?
You know, it's been difficult for us because of a few reasons. One is Green Finance, or Avafin, rebranded as Avafin, which was my and Davis's first company that we sold to Capitec, was a big, big customer for Esketit, right? It was like a partnering anchor and a loan originator when we started to get it. And because we've sold fully the company to Capitec over the last couple of years, now they receive a ton of funding from Capitec, which is, for those listeners that haven't heard of that deal, it's the biggest retail bank in South Africa. It's a multi-billion dollar company. And so they now give all the necessary funds to Avafin for them to execute their business plan, so they don't need any other alternative sources of funding. So they basically closed their position on Esketit, which was big. It was well over 10 million. And so that meant that we need to replace, you know, this loan originator, this volume. So that was something we had to deal with. We decided to go to Croatia away from Ireland. So that was, in terms of technical, operational, communications standpoint, another big project. And there were some things that we should have done probably better, differently, and we had never done that kind of a jump from one jurisdiction to another. So that was a big task. The third thing is, I would say, we changed a number of people in the team, primarily and most importantly, the CEO. So Ieva is now running Esketit, doing a great job. I took over from Vitalis. Vitalis did a good job getting the platform from zero over to where it was last year. But then we felt like we need to kind of institutionalize and bring in more processes into the platform in order to make it ready for the brokerage license, which is our eventual destination. And so that was a big change. So yeah, it was a year of a lot of change.
All right. Yeah, let's address the relocation and the jurisdiction change. Esketit has been registered from scratch in Ireland, where you have been ever since. Now, maybe in general, what have been the ideas of changing the jurisdiction in the first place?
Yeah, I think the main idea is like a, call it a regulatory question, where we see that there are more platforms that operate in this P2P online loans marketplace space in Croatia. So the communication with the regulator is easier in Croatia than it is in Ireland. That's one. Second, simple factor of costs. Ireland is a costly destination. If you want to get a license there, if you want to talk to the regulator, every single aspect costs a lot more money than in other jurisdictions and in a place like Croatia. That's the second main reason. So in terms of those two main things, that's what made up our mind to move from one place to another.
Did you face any, let's say, immediate problems in Ireland that made you change jurisdiction?
No, not immediate. We were thinking and calculating, okay, what do we do in terms of the long-term jurisdiction when it comes to the a license or some form of regulation, right? And so we understood that if we stay in Ireland, it's going to be probably the most expensive, even though it's a high prestige. It's a good destination for international companies. It's a good tax regime, but for building a platform like Esketit, which is expensive, right? It's a lot of compliance. It's a lot of IT, a lot of finance people required to run a platform like that. And especially if you have an ambition to eventually become regulated, then Ireland is a very difficult, jurisdiction for us in the long term. Yes, because we also are not in a position where we want to raise money from venture capital funds to build this out into something like a multi-product, brokerage platform. Primarily, Esketit is a tool that we use to fund our own businesses. Yes. And so because of that, the cost aspect is always important for us, and also the simplicity of running the business. And so we understood when we talked to the regulator in Ireland and we talked to the regulator in Croatia, we understood that Croatia is an easier destination. We had other alternatives like Estonia, and we just chose Croatia because there are more platforms that have exactly the same business model like ours in there.
I think so far understandable. The question that arises is obviously Esketit has publicly communicated several times to, you know, the ambition to become a regulated platform, a regulated entity. So the question is, why choosing Croatia instead of a regulated environment?
Why choosing Croatia instead of Latvia?
For instance.
Yeah, because we were not, even back last year, we were not entirely sure when and even if we're going to apply for the brokerage license. Yes, we were still thinking about other forms of licenses. There's I forgot the specific name, a license regime in Switzerland. There are a lot of licenses in Cyprus. So we thought, okay, if we have this period of next couple of years, maybe 2 to 3 years, in which we're still going to assess which jurisdiction to go for in order to get a license and to be a licensed platform, then we still need a few years to decide that. And we chose to be in Croatia for those few years until we figure out the sort of final destination. And by the end of last year, we understood that in terms of simplicity of talking to the regulator, in terms of also the cost, but more importantly, in terms of the experience of the regulator dealing with specifically the business model like ours, Latvia at the end of the day is the best option for us, even though we were kind of against it for a few years, especially me and Davis, we were kind of against it for various reasons that also have changed. Yeah, the attitude of the Latvian regulator towards fintechs and towards platforms like ours have changed. So we figured, okay, that makes sense. Talking to the regulator in our native language, it's faster, cheaper, it's just easier. And so, but we were not ready to make that jump right to Latvia with a license yet. And so we choose to have an intermediary step that would take 2 to 3 years. If needed, maybe longer, depending on the situation. And that's why the intermediary step, and that's why Croatia.
Okay, so from my understanding, you mentioned in the beginning you are working on setting up a brokerage company already now in Latvia, or you're working on the setup to then eventually make the move to become a regulated entity under the Latvian jurisdiction. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the plan is we will basically create a separate platform, a separate brand, in order also to avoid the mistakes or the issues we had from investor side when we moved from Ireland to Croatia. And it will be also easier, as we spoke with the regulator in Latvia, to just start from scratch as opposed to migrate, combine the different databases of customers, the processes, the registration flows all under one brand, and then have like different jurisdictions, so on. So we quickly, through the conversations with the regulator in Latvia, we figured that it just makes more sense. If you want to have a regulated entity, a regulated business, then you pretty much end up being in a position where it's easier to do it from scratch in Latvia. And so we decided that's going to be the way forward. We have started the application process. It will be a separate brand. Clearly, we will migrate as many of our existing customers as possible to this new brand.
What is the timeline?
Timeline is close to the end of this year. We expect to launch, but that can move depending on various factors by, I would say, 3 to 6 months. But generally, that's what we're thinking about.
And will investors need to fear potential consequences as it happened with the jurisdiction change from Ireland to Croatia, that some funds might be locked up and that are severely restricted in terms of liquidity?
No. So that is something we're not going to repeat for obvious reasons, because that was it was wrongly executed from our side in terms of not announcing it in advance. And so we're going to make sure that that doesn't happen again. And to that point, I would still want to add, which is also what we communicated on Telegram, even though the dissatisfaction for kind of clear reasons from the investors is there in terms of locking or shutting down the secondary market in Ireland, by March, which was a couple of months after we had started migration from Ireland to Croatia, we had paid back to investors over a third of all the commitments, of all the loans. And by end of this year, it will be well over 80%, close to 90% of all the loans in Ireland will be matured and paid back to the investors. So within basically a year, close to all of the funds will have been returned to the investors. So they have that liquidity. But clearly, yes, it's something that we need to learn from.
Yeah, this is actually one of the points that I also wanted to address, because I feel like there was some confusion in terms of those funds that, let's say, those 30% that you mentioned that have been repurchased now by, I think, already the end of February. Now, how much of this was due to early repayments from or repurchases from the lending companies versus they matured according to their schedule and was just like regular repayments? Can you clarify on this?
Majority was regular repayments as the maturity of the loans came due. Some of it were early repayments. The proportion, I don't know. That's a detail I need to check back.
Mm. And in terms of those 80%, what is the... Can you forecast in terms of like how much of this is due to the given loan schedule and how much the lending companies are actually repurchasing early to ensure liquidity for investors?
The most definitely way over 50% is and will be natural maturity of the loans.
Mm. Okay. Because then it looks a bit more like, let's say, a properly executed marketing campaign to kind of sell those repurchases as, okay, look, we ensure to repay them early.
We're not hiding. You have a loan that matures in 12 months. If those 12 months fall somewhere between the beginning of this year to the end of this year, you get it back. We're not saying we're going to all of a sudden pay back investors 40 million or 30 million or some kind of a number like that just in a matter of a couple of months. We are saying, okay, all these loans that are coming due, plus in some instances, some loan originators, for business reasons, they can give back the money early. And we are committing to that. And you need to make a note that that these maturities are not, 5-year maturities. That's I guess more of what I'm saying is, the loans that we issue and the money that we borrow has effectively very short maturities, starting from 1 month to 12 months. Some of them are 2 years, but those are very unpopular on the platform because of the long maturity. And so when people say, okay, I can't sell my loan, clearly, and that's our mistake, and we have to learn from that. But in the meantime, because of the maturity being so short, you get the money back in anyway a couple of months.
No, totally understood. I think it's just a matter of how you frame it, whether loans have been repurchased given platform mistakes that have been executed in the past versus the loans have matured and according to their schedule have been repaid to investors. So I feel like it's a matter of how you want to frame it then. But all right, good to hear your perspective on this. Yeah, maybe then just to wrap up this licensing topic, I would like to know, you mentioned a couple of times now in hindsight, you could have done things better. You mentioned communication. Overall, I feel like it was a week or maybe 9 days of notice prior announcing the jurisdiction change. What do you feel like have been the mistakes that Esketit has done in the process executing this jurisdiction change?
You know, there's a very limited space in which we can operate in terms of not creating legal liabilities for us and tax liabilities for us. Yes, not even talking about what is possible operationally, what's not possible operationally. So when we decided to move this jurisdiction, it wasn't a case where we could do it in a way that doesn't feel like it has a negative effect to anyone, right? So there are some trade-offs that we had to do. And obviously we calculated and figured out that the best way to do it is the way we did it. The main mistake is that we, in hindsight, is that we should have communicated the closure of the secondary markets way earlier in terms of other things. We did something that is not exciting for investors. And what we know is that on Telegram, the people that want to complain, they will always complain and say that they're unhappy and so on. So it's just, to some extent, it is what it is. We have to do the business decision that we have to do to make sure we have a continuous platform and have an execute a long-term plan. Sometimes it can be messy. You know, what can you do?
But instead of reducing it, let's say, to a few voices on Telegram, can you understand the overall frustration when liquidity opportunities such as secondary market, the early cash out functionality, when those liquidity tools that are obviously promised in advance to investors, when they are somehow vanished and there is no more ability for investors to rely on the liquidity, which may be a part of the reasons why they have invested there or allocated their funds on Esketit in the first place?
Sure, of course.
All right, good. Then let's switch over to a next topic. I don't want to talk about every single lending company that you have on the roster now on Esketit, but maybe just to outline two aspects. You mentioned already the Middle East currently, an area where it might be your business operations might be affected to an extent. Can you shed some light into how the situation is currently in Jordan and in general your lending operations that you have in the Middle East?
Yeah. So we have active lending operations in Jordan. We're undergoing a licensing process. I cannot at the moment share exact details because it's a bit confidential and the regulator is sensitive in Jordan. But basically, we're undergoing a licensing process. We should get a license very soon. The process has been longer than we expect, but that's oftentimes the case with complex, fairly large scale businesses. So that's Jordan. In terms of the impact of the war on the operations there, not significant impact. The main focus for us has been not on the demand, let's say reduced demand because of the war, but more on the payment discipline of customers. And to be honest, this war is not the first time that in this region, in the last couple of years, we have had this turbulence. So if we remember back, I think October 2023, right, when there was the Hamas attack on Israel, I think it was 23, we also saw this kind of reduction in the overall economic activity for a couple of months, and then it kind of resumes back. So that's what we're seeing in Jordan. And because of that experience, I also think that is what is going to happen in the broader Middle East region. I can share that we have been working on launching lending businesses and operations in nearby countries, in the rich Arab states, one of them being the UAE. It's a very complicated market to enter, massive licensing requirements. Effectively, you cannot enter it without a partner. And dealing with local partners is a whole different, you know, story. And so we're working on that. Again, I don't want to make kind of early promises and announcements, but it looks like within this year, we need to make some final checks, but we should be also able to start operating in the UAE. it's stretched the whole project, the launch, into longer than we anticipated or hoped for before the war started, because I don't know, the partnering banks, for example, they have suffered some outages because they were using AWS data centers that were hit by a drone, you know, things like that, which is basically a force majeure kind of situation. But everybody wants to get back to normality as soon as possible. We are still at the mercy of, you know, when some kind of settlement or agreement comes. But I think it will be a matter of weeks or a month or two. And even if the settlement doesn't come, like I said, people want to get back to a normal, more or less normal way of living. And they get used to having this war situation going on, and they still want to live normal lives and the business resume. So I'm hoping, in the worst case, I'm hoping that's going to be the case and that we can launch some operations in the UAE as well this year.
Just one quick follow-up on the Jordan lender. How, if you have any numbers to share, do you have any metrics in terms of how the performance as well as the loan demand from borrower side is developing the past weeks?
Yeah. So I can comment on the last year, 2025. So the revenue is over 30 million euros. Net profit is slightly below 3 million euros, changed from 2024 by about 1.5 million lower than 2024, primarily because of 1 million of unrealized loss in FX change, because the Jordanian dinar is tied to the dollar. Dollar has fallen against the euro over the last year, last couple of months. So that's one. Second important note is we are also reducing the exposure that Jordan has on Esketit significantly. We've paid back a lot of loans. I don't have the exact number. I think it's over 10 million euros worth of loans that Jordan had borrowed from Esketit investors since the end of last year, or the middle rather of last year. The reason being that the regulator in Jordan has asked us to find additional and alternative funding sources to Esketit, because we're going through this licensing process and the central bank wants us to make sure that we have other funding sources, primarily coming from Jordan itself, that they can control better and things like that.
All right. Now, I meant specifically in Jordan, let's say the first quarter, which just ended. But if you have any, let's say, micro data in terms of loan performance from the past weeks and months.
As usual, defaults are about 12%. Profitable, the business is profitable. That's about what I can share. At the moment, I cannot share a lot more details because, like I said, we're reducing the exposure we have on Esketit specifically for Jordan. So we are not actively borrowing more funding for the Jordan business.
All right. And the second lending company I would like to address is Jet Finance, a mogul company from Kazakhstan, your most recent partner that joined the marketplace. Maybe just a quick background to, you know, the how things have evolved to onboard them, and if that's maybe also where you see also the way forward, incorporating more non-affiliated lending companies that share, let's say, similar characteristics to Avafin, that are a bit more established, that are profitable, that have like a solid business in the background. So is that the way also moving forward then?
That's a good question. To be very honest, yes and no. So what we have done is we've spent a lot of time over the last year and a half. There have been quite a few relatively big companies from Philippines, you know, from Kazakhstan, like Jet Finance, and a number of other ones that we have talked to and almost made deals to get them onboarded on Esketit. And the reason we do that for ourselves, I'll go back to Jet Finance specifically, but to give a kind of a broader context, why do we do that, right? Because we started off the platform saying that it will serve primarily and in the beginning only our loan originators, our meaning companies owned by myself and others. Once we got kind of big enough and met the needs of our own lending companies, we thought, okay, there's more demand from investors for loans than we can supply with our own lending companies. That's one. Second, if there are situations like we had with Avafin, Korean Finance, and also even with Jordan, right, where these loan originators, for whatever reasons, they reduce the exposure that they have on Esketit, we need to replace these loans. And if we are only sticking with our own lending companies, then we are putting ourselves in a difficult position where there always will be a risk of big mismatch between the supply of our loans versus demand from investors, right? And so we want it or not, we effectively have to introduce other supply sources to make sure that we don't have this disparity in supply and demand. And that's the reason that we talk to other companies, more established, proper big lending businesses that we can verify their scoring, their audited results, and that have a decent need for or for the size of the loans that they want to borrow. And that's why we speak to these companies. Jet Finance just meets all these different criteria, but it's not a case where we want to become, let's say, the second Mintos, right? It's still a situation where primarily Esketit is serving the funding needs of our existing businesses, but to make sure it's stable and it can grow steadily bigger, we have to also onboard other companies, right? That's why we kind of ended up with for example, a company like Jet Finance. It was a long process going through the due diligence, agreeing all the data, agreeing the terms and conditions. And at the end of the day, Jet Finance at the moment is borrowing at a fairly low interest rate, lower than all the other lenders that we have on the platform, and at a higher maturity, longer maturity, sorry, than other loans on the platform. Hence, as we see, investors are not keen to buy Jet Finance loans. So we are discussing with Jet Finance how to make sure that what they offer from their side meets the desired kind of criteria from the investors, right? And that's a process that we're now kind of working on. It's a difficult business model, yeah, to go and onboard third-party loan originators. You're taking on a lot of, due diligence work, structuring, understanding the company, understanding the jurisdiction, and the margins are not great. And hence, we've never thought of this as a business model to raise money for third-party companies is a great business model. But for us, like I said, the purpose is to make sure that we have a sufficient number of companies always on the platform so that with a growing demand from investors, we have demand and supply meeting.
And looking at the, let's say, bigger picture, do you see like that's the way moving forward for Esketit to primarily now focus on third parties to join the platform, or the companies that you mentioned that you start building up now, Malaysia, Peru, will they be then simultaneously coexist with external lenders? Where's, let's say, the vision and the bigger picture then for Esketit?
Yeah. So the big picture and the vision, if we can call it that, is first of all, that we want to get to a position where Esketit is a regulated platform, right? In the long term, this is what is good for everybody and primarily for the lending companies that are actually onboarding and borrowing money from Esketit. Yes. If it's an unregulated platform and we can operate as an unlicensed, yes, platform, it's okay. But when you have heavily licensed lending businesses, then this becomes difficult. So you need to also have a licensed platform. So that's kind of the first step. Getting there is complicated and expensive enough, right? That it's not a trivial thing. Oh, you just, get licensed and then you kind of think about other things. You need to get licensed. That's, it's a serious thing. And then the second thing is how do you cover costs, right? How do you cover the cost of the license that makes your platform kind of more sustainable long-term for all the parties involved? For us, we still plan to cover the cost of Esketit through primarily growing and onboarding our own lending companies. So like I mentioned, Malaysia, Peru, Mexico, in the future, more countries in the Middle East, if we can structure them to be onboarded on Esketit. That's still an if, right? That will be anyway the primary income source for Esketit, not the third-party lending companies. So that's always going to, not always. So that's, at the moment, that's the key focus. Our own lending companies, some of them are growing very fast. Like, for example, in Peru, we have a lot of demand. We know that that will create a lot of demand for the investors. In order to balance out this demand and supply, in parallel, we are kind of like selectively looking at third-party companies. And depending on the situation, we will onboard some of them at some points in time. That's basically where we are at the moment. We're not planning further than that because this is complicated and expensive enough to implement at the moment.
How do you personally perceive this kind of transition phase? Because I remember conversations that we had years ago and I would say you had very explicit opinions about, let's say, the Latvian regulator, which don't need to be repeated right now. You were very clear about regulation. You always had the drive for building up your own lending companies. Now you are kind of like growing into this maturing platform stage where you say, okay, Esketit has to be regulated. We onboard third-party lenders, although this was never the primary objective. How do you personally perceive this kind of transition?
How do I perceive it? I mean, I just look at the P&L. By this point in my career, I'm very transactional, right? I just look at what things cost, what amount of money, where it sits in the overall like scheme of businesses and priorities that we have. And if we need to get licensed to have a sustainable way to fund on the other side, the very licensed, heavily licensed lending companies, then we need to do that. Then we need to figure out a way to get there in the most cost optimal way and then just execute. How do I feel about it? Am I a guy that loves compliance, AML, regulatory meetings, you know, dealing with the regulator? Fuck no, of course not. Are you kidding me? Like, that's the last thing I want to do in my life. But I'm in a business that provides financial services. So that's the rules of the game. So it's, my job is to get very capable, good people that are good at doing this. So, and so I can spend my time on the more the demand side, the lending companies, the different products in various jurisdictions, partnerships in the Middle East and things like that.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Yeah. Well, you gave already, I would say, an outlook in terms of where you see the vision of Esketit, where you're heading. So I would like to maybe just pick out or isolate one topic, which is liquidity. Obviously, in the market, there's an ongoing trend to serve more liquidity, make products easy to understand, very easy handling, fixed income products. Is this something where Esketit is then potentially under the new jurisdiction, or maybe even now considering to, you know, explore this option as well to get, you know, again, liquidity in focus on the platform?
Yeah. So if I understand your question, are you asking, are we thinking generally about new products that can be easy to use, give like a comfortable fixed income to our investors?
Yes.
Yes. You know, look, I would love to do that. Also, it would be good for our platform and good for us. It would be good business for us to have other even non-lending company kind of funding products. Let's say, I don't know, that could be bonds, or I don't think we're going to go into the direction of when we have a license to broker other financial instruments. I don't think we're going to, you know, go and offer shares and ETFs and things like that. That's completely not on the radar for us. We are definitely looking and thinking about other lending products, fixed income products that we could offer our investors, where we have the know-how to be able to onboard and understand those products, where those products are effectively fixed income and meet the sort of expectation that investors have on coming from to our platform, and where we can realistically execute that through the license in terms of licensing requirements, what is complicated, what needs to be repackaged, and so on. So yes, we are thinking about that. I wish I could give some exciting promises about what we're rolling out. I don't want to do that yet. I can promise when we decide, you're going to be the first one to know that deal we can make.
Okay.
But we are thinking about it, of course. I mean, like, you know, we're looking at what Mintos does, what other platforms are doing, what works, right? Also, you can introduce cool things. Like, I was working a couple of years ago on the idea of pre-IPOs. I got this club deal where we invested in Revolut, for example, that ended up being like a lucky, good investment. And I was thinking, okay, how do you make this investment instrument available to, let's say, Esketit investors? And first and foremost, obviously, you have to have the broker's license. But then when you want to kind of sell it as a licensed instrument, it introduces so many difficult things. And then every time you look at some instrument, then you understand that the complexity behind is vast. And at the end of the day, like, you need to somehow make money on it, or at least cover your costs. And when you put all these things together in a European regulated financial brokerage market, it's a very tough space. So we are very careful, you know, about thinking about these products.
Is it a bold move now to predict that this new lending product that, you know, you can't disclose too much, but you're kind of teasing now, that this will be starting off only under the new regulated jurisdiction, Latvia?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Then maybe to wrap up, last question, because I know you're always a guy that, you know, has a broader observation of the industry as a whole. How closely do you still monitor, follow the industry, the bigger picture in the non-bank lending sector? And which kind of trends do you see? Any threats that you see? Or how do you perceive the current, let's say, market dynamic?
You're talking about lending companies, not the P2P loan marketplaces, yes?
As you want. You can go in both directions.
Well, I guess I certainly follow more the lending business because that's where the revenue, the profitability is made. Of course, we look at some of these rankings for the P2P platforms and what kind of jurisdictions, what license regimes different companies are choosing. But that's more to be up to date rather than to understand like how we're going to build our business in terms of the lending. I guess, so one thing is Europe is continuously being more and more regulated. There's a new directive, I forgot the exact name, coming in that will restrict the consumer lending, the interest rate extensions more within Europe coming in November of this year. There was a transition period from last year to this year.
That European Consumer Credit Directive too.
Yes, exactly that. So it doesn't affect us heavily or at all, basically, because we don't have a lot of consumer lending operations now ourselves going on in Europe. But so that's where I'm looking at how other companies are preparing for that. It's one thing. And as a result of that, when it comes to especially online consumer lending businesses, we see that the growth and the experimentation and the attempts to create kind of growth come from obviously outside of these regulated markets. Hence, we enter countries like Malaysia, Peru, other places in Southeast Asia and Latin America, because those are like relatively not untapped, but relatively like more available markets for growth where the regulation is not as heavy, but it introduces a bunch of other risks, the Forex risks and, you know, stability of the market, things like that. So overall, I would say like for the consumer lending, the environment has gotten more complicated because of more regulatory risk. More companies keep competing for the same number of markets. More companies having more funding. So there's a ton of these P2P platforms. They work very well. They give you, you know, access to funding and you can be more aggressive in selecting many countries at the same time. Let's say 10 years ago, it wasn't the case. I mean, the funding was a very restricting kind of factor for lending companies, right? So that's another thing. And then the third assessment or observation from my experience of, I don't know how many countries we opened, like 15 maybe, is that you kind of never know. You can do all the research you want. You can rely on the success of your competitors, which is one of the best indicators of like, hopefully building out a good business. But at the end of the day, you have to go into the country, build it out and quickly test and see if it's going to be a good business or not. You can have all these fantasies about like, I'm going to build an app and a credit card and then like, I'm going to open digital accounts and these customers are going to come. And all of that goes to complete trash if you go into the wrong market where customers are just using cash. They couldn't care less about your digital journey, right? While in some other country, like it's all about like a great app and you can introduce some products and they just sell easier for whatever reasons. And so it's always a gamble is not the right word. It's always an experiment. So that I figured out.
All right. Thanks for sharing those insights. I can recommend, because at times somehow I see your recommendations on LinkedIn where you have panel discussions or let's say presentations in front of some students where you elaborate on how to grow a lending business in foreign countries where you have no footprint whatsoever. So that's quite educating to an extent. So I like to follow this here and there whenever there's an opportunity. And yeah, for anyone who wants to dive into those kind of topics a bit deeper, I think there's always a lot of knowledge, always a good sense of humor inside as well. And honest approach.
Have you checked our Blackhawk's English channel?
I came across it now a few times, yes. Yeah. You're not on the... What's your position inside of this Black Box podcast?
So I it's basically my podcast. I just do not take part in every single conversation. I have a co-host, which is Nix, who is doing most of the interviews. I join in sometimes. I basically provide funding for the project, and then we sit together to figure out what kind of guests we take on and some things like that. And then with Nix, we also do some of these events, like you mentioned, where I'm sharing, I don't know, things about doing business in foreign markets. But we had this podcast in Latvian, and then we launched it in English as well last year. And I was just wondering if you've ever come across it or not.
I saw the recent conversation. What was it? A guy from Estonia. What was it? I forgot the name now.
Lightyear. That was one I remember. Like also investment brokerage.
Yes, exactly. But I would say it's probably not content for the average Joe. So if you're really like into finance and to understanding like
entrepreneurship, I would say, yeah. Finance, sometimes we get like fintechs, but the focus is on entrepreneurial content.
Yeah. No, that was very interesting to follow. So we can link to it, obviously. Black cool. Box podcast. Yeah. Interesting venture. So yeah, keep also the influencer game up to an extent.
Yeah, that's it. That only costs me money, you know, but it's okay. It's a nice hobby.
If you can afford it, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Mattis, then thanks a lot for your time today, for sharing those insights. Good luck again, or continuous luck with Escatted, and then until next time.
Excellent, Danny. Thanks a lot for the questions.